Welcome to Synthaholics. This is your host, David Duncan. And with me, we've got Aaron O'Brien.
Hello.
And we got Peter from the Geekiverse.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Yeah.
Welcome back, sir.
Yeah, thanks for coming on the show.
Yeah, it's been a while, hasn't it?
Yeah. What do we have you on, the reunification?
No, I think it was, wasn't the Hirogen one? Or was that with Adam?
That was with Adam. See, Adam's going to be pissed off.
Yeah.
Because I call Adam Pete at some time.
We're confusing the hers.
I called Adam Pete at some time. He said he was going to kill me.
Oh, yeah.
He loves that.
It was at Nickel City. I think he said he was going to murder you for that.
Yeah, no, he definitely loves when you compare him to me.
Yeah.
and unfortunately, Holly won't be with us tonight. She has been abducted by the Red Angel.
Wait, what? No. You guys promised Holly. What am I doing here?
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, well, she abandoned us last second, so the Red Angel took her last second, so we don't know where she's at. But apparently she's got the lowdown on the Red Angel before the rest of us do.
Well, let the record clearly state I'm doing this under protest.
All right.
Well,
understood.
She's she's upset. Yeah. She's missing you, too, so the feeling's mutual.
Aw, fair. Yeah,
that is nice. All right, I'll stay.
Okay. So Pete is one of the founding members of the Geekiverse. And Pete, why don't you just tell everybody quickly about the Geekiverse.
Oh, it's 7 years ago.
Yes, there you go. Yeah.
Geekiverse, geekiverse.com. We're a pop culture website located in Buffalo, New York. And we do news and reviews for anything geeky, movies, TV, books, comics, you name it.
Right. And you've been writing about Star Trek and Star Trek Discovery as you have time to type it up on the keyboard.
And yeah,
he did this great 200 episode interview with the three of us.
Oh, yes, he did.
That's true. Star Trek's my jam, only because I'm the oldest guy in the whole group, and I was around when it was actually out the first time.
Ah, see, that means you have taste.
Yeah, exactly. And the
it
couple
also
times
means I have gray hair and failing hearing and all that stuff too. Well, bad knees.
That all goes with the territory.
I'm like a grandpa now. I can fart the paint off a wall. That's new for me.
Oh. That's interesting.
Super exciting.
It's when the bowels. It's when the bowels are aged perfectly.
Well, then they must be perfect.
Nice.
Well, you
nice.
Know, it just. I remember the first couple of times coming over to your guys' studio, and when we talk Star Trek together, all the young people's eyes. And I'm not too old. I mean, I'm the youngest person on this podcast at the moment, but. All the other younger people, their eyes just glazed over, and they were like, what?
Yeah, you know, they're all lovers of Star Trek, but only...
Star Wars?
Well, they're all lovers of Star Wars. That's their thing. But they're all lovers of Star Trek as created by J.J. Abrams. That's all they know is those three movies, and they don't know much else.
Yeah.
That they got a slight gap,
but
in the
they
want to
learn.
They
want to learn.
Here's an interesting question I'd like to pose to you, since you know obviously you're working with a lot of these younger fans,
whippersnappers
of sci-fi and pop culture. Do they find any incentive to sign on to CBS All Access to watch? Star Trek Discovery, because I think my personal takeaway is that a young person might say that looks interesting, but I'm just not signing up to another service to get into something else that might be comparable, and I can do it through Netflix, Hulu, or Amazon Prime.
I don't believe any of them have CBS All Access for the purpose of watching Star Trek. I don't think that probably any of them have CBS All Access. I mean, when I think about what else is on there, like I got it right away.
Right.
All I've watched is Discovery. And then over the summer a little bit when it was between seasons. I started to rewatch Enterprise because it was there. It's the series I'm least familiar with. So I thought, you know, like I've seen everything else 2, 3, 4 times. When Adam was growing up, we'd come back from school and it was on, I forget what they did TNG for a while, but every day after school, we'd get like 3 hours in a row of Voyager. Nice. So we'd both get home from school at the same time. We'd sit down and watch a couple episodes of Voyager before Mom got home.
Right. Nice.
But we might have even told her that we're doing our homework too. We might have said that.
Of course.
Good news is she's not going to listen to this podcast, so I'm probably not in trouble.
Oh, yes. Good. Get your fingers crossed. So, but the other thing, what else would you even get All Access for unless you just want really old shows? The only other thing I'm personally looking forward to is the Twilight Zone that's coming back in April?
Yeah, that looks interesting.
Yeah, but you know what did well on TV is The Good Wife, and now they've spun off that show with Christine Baranski, also a Buffalo girl. And she's playing her character from The Good Wife in a show called The Good Fight.
So she beats someone up every episode?
It's a law drama. Oh. What's that?
So she beats someone up every episode? It's like a boxing show?
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't seen it. It's a law show.
Oh.
So not terribly interesting to me other than Christine Baranski, who I have a 4-hour history with.
Nice.
Stuck in an elevator?
No, when I first got out of college, I worked for Studio Arena Theater in Buffalo, and her brother was the Playbill sales rep. So she was already starting to do her out of Buffalo career. So he came down to the scene shop one day and we were all working. He said, I need you guys help. My sister's moving. We got to load the van and stuff. I pay in pizza and beer. So we went. She was, as I recall, she was living in this little carriage house behind her parents' house.
Okay.
Over in, you know, that section of Buffalo where there's actually carriage houses behind the real houses.
Mm-hmm.
And we backed up the truck and we loaded up her stuff and had pizza and beer with Christine Baranski, and then she left. I'm sure it's stuck in her mind too. Like,
yeah, she remembered you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Have you had her on the Gigaverse yet?
No.
Let's
make that a 5-hour pass, right?
93, dude. It was way earlier than that. I got out of college in 86.
I don't remember.
It was 80. Yeah. It was probably 87 or 88, maybe.
Interesting.
Yeah.
But just going back quickly, circle back. So the CBS All Access, I find, is it's a roadblock to younger people and other people getting into Star Trek, and other diehard fans like us obviously will, you know, get the subscription and watch. But I have this just fear that a lot of people just are not going to be, you know, picking this up.
Well, I agree, because if your only experience is movies, you don't really have the incentive to jump to episodic stuff, you know, like why would you do that? So
I thought
would you pay $7 a month or whatever it costs? I try not to pay attention to the cost, or I wouldn't probably do it anymore.
Right. Yeah. Well, gotcha.
I thought CBS All Access said they exceeded their accounts for this time. I think they weren't counting on this many accounts till later.
Well, still, my point only being is like we're not getting new viewers. You're getting the same the same pool. You're not expanding your pool.
I agree with that.
I mean, their pool is expanding if they've got their numbers higher, although who knows if they're coming for Star Trek or not. Although the season has been getting generally better praise than season one from what I can tell on the internet, so maybe more people are, like, checking it out.
How do you feel about that? Do you think this is better than last season?
So far, I think it's much better than last season. The last two episodes I wasn't crazy about, but still overall I like it better than last season.
I've been so much more on board on this season.
Yeah, it's not anywhere near as dark, and I do like one of the things about the Star Trek episodic stuff is that it's old style, so it's all villain of the week kind of stuff.
Yeah,
and I like that they're doing more of that. You know, you still have got that overarching theme, but then they do standalone episodes.
which is cool. So
it's not last season was really one long story arc, where this season you're getting more of that, separate stuff. It was nice. It was nice for Saru to have his own little shindig this week. You know, we're getting to meet the characters on the bridge where last year they were just place cards.
They were just
place cards. You know.
Well, so we'll get into this episode, but real quickly, we had the news of the actor Morgan Woodward. He passed away at 93 years old. He was in two episodes of the original series, Dagger of the Mine, where he plays Dr. Simon Van Gelder. And then we have the Omega Glory, where he plays Captain Ronald Tracy. And he was the captain of the U.S. Exeter. And he kind of broke or violated the Prime Directive in that one. So
everyone violates the Prime Directive. It's not bad.
As we'll see in this episode,
Prime directives.
Who needs a Prime Directive?
They're only there to be broken.
Apparently nobody even pays attention.
No, it's just there to make people feel bad for a minute.
So,
and they promptly ignore it until the next episode where they have to think about it for a second again. And let's just ignore it again.
We did get a platitude in this episode, but we'll get into that, I guess, for a minute.
Blessed are the poor in spirit, for they'll inherit the earth.
Okay, so anyway, so here's the episode. The episode is Star Trek Discovery, The Sounds of Thunder. And this is season 2, episode 6, and first aired February 21st, 2019. And we get the story starts off where Michael Burnham and Tilly are talking about the information that they recovered from the sphere. And Saru is undergoing physical examination after his ganglia is dropped into the sick bay. And Dr. Kolber is there as well, as he's kind of out of sorts, I guess is the best way you can put it, as he's being looked over. Yeah. Yeah. And when Saru goes over to him, he has a little jump. Like, who the hell are you?
Peripheral vision. Use it.
Yes.
Do you think it's that, though? Or do you think that he's not the same person he was
before all of this stuff happened? I hope he turns crazy.
Well, I bet he kind of is a little bit crazy. Like, I feel like the tension between him and
Stamets.
Do you know what I mean? Like, there's not the connection that there was before he.
Yeah,
it's zapped off to the mycelial network.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how that works out. But if they do retire the spore drive, it'll be interesting if they make Stamets and Kolber switch places in their importance in the show. Whereas, like, Stamets will become less and less important. Maybe Kolber will be more and more important. Maybe they'll kill off the other doctor and make Kolber the main doctor. And then Stamets is just kind of like the side character, where like kind of the other role's kind of reverse. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, we do find out that Saru's... his ganglia is dropped out because of his Vahari, which is a part of their biology where they change and their threat ganglia drops out. So no longer doesn't have this impending fear all the time. But now the doctor, Pollard says that he seems to be growing teeth.
Your Kelpian is evolving.
Yes. So he's changing.
Pikachu. Pika, pika.
Pika.
So
I think they use
Saru.
Pretty much, they use evolving the same way they did in Pokemon.
Yes, just fit him into a little ball and throw him out at your challenger. then we have a quick dialogue between Saru and Kolber, basically saying that this is a transformative moment in your life, and you're most likely will be who you're meant to become. I think Saru is talking a little bit more about himself now.
I think so too, but I think they're trying to link them together narratively, just so they can be on screen together for a reason.
Yeah,
it's weak, but you know they're trying, sort of.
Well, anyways, Saru gives a comment saying, "What is a Kelpian without fear?" So it's something that defined him, and all of a sudden he does not have that fear anymore.
Not nearly as delicious.
Yes, yeah, exactly. So save that.
Like, Yeah, once those little ganglion things are gone, like, is Kelpian sushi any good anymore?
No. I guess not.
Yeah, fry them up in butter. So,
little flour, just, you know,
a little garlic.
Bacon wrapped Kelpian ganglia.
I'm going with garlic, but anyways, so we go to the ready room there. We have Ash Tyler and Michael Burnham and Captain Pike in there talking about how the seven signals are being generated by this supposed red angel.
He's not wearing black anymore, though.
He is not.
You know, I totally made a note of that I appreciated his Section 31 uniform way better than putting him back in. Made him kind of stand out.
Why are they back in Discovery Blues? Why is Pike in Discovery Blues? Why he's captain of the Enterprise. He's only temporarily on assignment on Discovery. Why? I don't know.
Wants to fit in?
No.
Everyone changed their uniforms. They had all of the uniforms left over from
Season 1?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wonder if he's actually wearing a Jason Isaacs outfit. That'd be kind of funny. Although Jason Isaacs probably is a smaller man than Anthem now.
Yeah, it's written in marker on the back, Isaacs. It's mine. So while they're talking about it, that there might be temporal incursions that are happening and it might be dangerous. And Pike points out that the two signals that the Discovery has gone to look after or look into were rescue missions. And so we have the Hiawatha, where they saved those people that were stranded. Yeah. Jet Reno was on there. And then we also have the planet where they were all going to die because of the debris that was going to cause a nuclear holocaust.
What I thought was interesting about that exchange was that I rewound it because I wanted to make sure I heard it right, where Ash Tyler calls it the enemy entity we know as the Red Angel. I was like, enemy, huh? Like, the Section 31's immediately classifying this thing as an enemy.
That's what Section 31 does. They're enemy classifiers.
Ash Tyler's been in Section 31 for like 24 hours at this point. Like, they've totally changed his character from how he was in Season 1.
Yeah, David, it's page number one of the Section 31 handbook. It's like, everybody's an enemy.
No, but I just mean, like, Ash Tyler's whole demeanor. Like, he's like totally bought it, hook, line, and sinker.
Yeah, that's the one thing I had noticed about the episode, that Ash Tyler is like, he's towing that party line really hard now because he's got a job.
He has a reason to exist now, so he's going for it full force.
Yeah, I it seems
so. Is Vok gone?
No, he's still there.
He's inside there, right?
He's inside there. Vok just doesn't have control. The sub personality has control over the Vok's transformed body, which made no sense to me. They still never explained that. Like, why would Laurel purposely dismantle the Vok personality and let the Tyler personality live, even though it's Vok's body? It seems
maybe it's
like
a Hulk kind of thing, where like the Bruce Banner Hulk kind of thing passes back and forth.
Maybe. I mean, it'd be interesting if it does pass back and forth, but from what they said in Season 1, it sounds like Vok is dead as far as the personality goes, but just Ash has access to all his memories.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Even though the body is Vok's body and not Ash's body, but whatever.
Yeah, well, I don't know. Well, I know we'll find out more.
Maybe in Season 3 we'll find out, because they like fleshing out past season stuff. Like,
I am so hoping that Ash Tyler dies by the end of this episode, the season.
It looks like he might die in the next episode, because they show him the shuttlecraft and that squid breaks it open and explodes it.
Yeah. All right.
They could always bring him back, though, for the Section 31 show.
Who else is in there?
I don't know.
Oh, yeah, it's true. They'll get beamed out last second.
Right. Well, I thought the one navigator.
Oh.
Right. Not the woman with the cybernetic thing hanging out of her face, the one next to her.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? I think that she's in there, too.
You know, as long as Ash Tyler dies, Pete, I don't care. I he's probably my least favorite
Anyone else is expendable as long as Ash Tyler dies.
Yes. Just take him down.
I don't know if I could pick a least favorite character.
I really don't like him. So they have this little back and forth about is it a threat, or is it actually guiding Discovery to go on these rescue missions? And Pike brings out that the Section 31 Captain Leland is putting a lot of work into coming up what's going on with these what's going on with these red bursts, and also what's happening with Spock. And then she asks Michael, "Is there any place that they could be looking for Spock that they haven't thought before?" And when he asked her that,
we haven't checked there yet.
Yeah. There you go. Let's go to Vulcan.
Well, because that's the next episode. They go to Vulcan. I'm like, oh, I bet he finds him underneath his bed.
I was like, oh, well, I guess, sure. Goes to Vulcan.
That was a little kind of weird to me. Like, you didn't think to look there?
Yeah, I know. That'd be the first place. Oh, he went home.
Right. Every time I look for my keys, you didn't look on the key rack?
Exactly. You didn't check your coat pocket?
The most important place?
So Saru calls Pike to the bridge, where they get another signal from the red burst has come. And this time it is coming from Saru's home planet. And so they obviously go to warp and race there as fast as possible to go to Kamnar?
Kaminar
system. So the Kaminar system is obviously the Saru's people are down there, the Kelpian, but they have a predator race that they cohabit with the Baalu. And
it's kind of like, it sounds sort of like the Stargate people, the Gwauld.
Oh, nice. I forgot about Stargate people.
Except for everyone at Stargate pronounces them differently, which drove me crazy, and I couldn't get past the first season because everyone said it different.
You know, they had to get the kinks out, but they went for a very long time. So Baalu are have warp capability, and I guess 20 years ago they made contact with the USS Archimedes, which had Captain Giorgio before she was a captain aboard. And Saru is when we saw him made that attempt to contact anybody, and
that's
what
spell.
Yes, with the Baalu speak and spell. And he contacted a Lieutenant Giorgio, and she just decided to say, what the hell, let's pick this guy up.
And it totally was like, I laughed a little bit at the end. I was like, oh, look, it's Star Trek, You've Got Mail. It was totally that. It was just like, let's talk to each other back and forth, and then, oh, come with me.
Hitchhiker.
Yeah.
It was almost a Hallmark movie.
Yeah, and it breaks the Prime Directive terribly. So the Baalu are warp capable, and they were going to try to have them at least have a discussion about becoming part of the Federation, but they don't want to have any part of anybody, so they're completely xenophobic.
They might be dicks.
They seem like assholes.
Wow. Yeah. Went from xenophobic to all sorts of anatomical parts.
Well, they kind of drip and ooze. I mean,
you went there.
I often do.
Yeah, that was awful, David. That was awful.
You're welcome.
I really did like the design there, though.
Oh, how they look?
Yeah, like I would have liked it way more if we didn't just talk about every anatomical part dripping and oozing before
just
we talked
one
about them. But
yeah, they are kind of swamp people.
Yeah, I thought they looked super cool.
But they believe in, or they promote this idea of the Great Balance, and the Great Balance is basically the Kelpian, once they reach the maturity where their ganglia are supposed to drop off, they get chosen and beamed up and are turned into dinner.
Yes.
So now we insert the Logan's Run reference.
Very good. And I just recently watched Logan's Run on Netflix.
Which is what reminded me of that. Because you and I were talking about that earlier.
Yeah. Yeah, they have the whole reborn or renew. Mm-hmm. Renew. Logan's Run, if you have not seen it, it's on Netflix. It's totally cheesy, but it's fun to watch. So I enjoyed myself immensely. Dave, you probably like it too. There's lots of tits in that movie.
Woo! My dad likes that movie. I've seen bits and pieces of it. Yeah. I don't think I've seen it all the way through yet.
I'm sort of surprised that one never got a reboot.
I think they're going to, honestly. Somebody pointed out that there's a novel which I never read before, and that they would might make a nice short series.
Ken Levine, he's the guy who behind the BioShock 1, BioShock Infinite games. He's super into screenwriting, or at least Logan's Run, and he was like years ago he was talking about like making his new treatment for a Logan's Run movie, but it's been like almost a decade, it feels like, since that, and I haven't heard anything new from that. But I mean, there's been rumblings of it. Hopefully it'll happen.
It would. I think it would go really well with modern effects. You get rid of that dopey robot.
Oh yeah. That,
you know what I mean? Like there's
some more Will Robinson
story itself. I think, you know, it kind of fits every sci-fi trope in the world, but you know, I do. I think it would make a really good modern movie.
Yeah. The only thing I felt was unrealistic. I mean, in the movie is very unrealistic, period, but was the very end where Logan kind of overloads the computer, and then the computer, just the whole city starts blowing up, and then all the people just walk out of the city and meet that old guy at the end.
Yeah.
That was the only part was like, come on, that was a little push. That was a little, like, too fast.
Oh, it totally was, but it was 1970.
I know, exactly. So, anyways, let's get back to Discovery. Logan's Run is fun, but maybe someday, if you get a chance to watch it, it's you'll waste a good 2 hours. And if you have a couple drinks, you might enjoy yourself.
Yeah, no, it's way better when you have a couple drinks.
Ooh. Yeah. Just laugh your ass off. Don't take it serious.
That'll be good.
The one thing that they keep on they're racing to Saru's home planet to catch up with this red burst that they saw. But when they get there, the red burst is gone, unfortunately, as always.
Surprise, surprise, surprise.
No, we missed it again. Why don't we use the spore drive?
Where's my red thing?
That was funny. That was funny, David. It was funny when he said that.
What?
Where's my red thing?
Oh, yeah. It was great.
It was funny.
Yeah. You trying to say it wasn't funny when I said it?
I'm trying to say that that speaking of oozing, you were oozing that you didn't like that part.
No, I liked that part. I thought it was good.
We were laughing. We are big Pike fans on this season. We really enjoy Pike quite a bit.
I got to tell you, I am a big fan of Anson Mount's portrayal.
Yeah,
I am.
And if they did a Pike series,
I would be all for that.
I'd watch that.
Keep Rebecca Romijn. Yeah, it'd be freaking awesome.
I'd watch that. Yeah,
I'm a little disappointed that we haven't seen more of her character. Like,
I know
the way she advertised it on Instagram when she made the announcement. You know, I'm like, oh, she's gonna be a regular.
I ordered a cheeseburger.
And we saw her for like 11 seconds.
Yeah, I would order a cheeseburger.
11 seconds and one cheeseburger.
Yeah. Although the cheeseburger looked good.
It did look good.
Almost as good as she did, right?
Yes. Well, so when they get there, they're asking, does your race, do the Kelpians have anything like a Red Angel kind of in their – you know, religion or mythology? And he just says, no, we just believe in the Great Balance. There's nothing like that. And there's nothing like the Great Angel or a Red Angel that we've ever encountered or in our history. And so what they're going to do is, because the Balu are isolationists, they're going to just nicely ask if they can talk to them and see if they have any of their readings on this Red Burst and see what happens. Of course, when they get there, they don't answer any of their hails. And they decide that they're going to go down to the planet and check things out. So Saru beams down with Michael, and they get the chance to reconnect with his sister. That was kind of cool.
Yeah, we got the sister. I figured at least the sister or the father had to come back, although we do learn the father's been since devoured.
He's dinner.
He's been dinnerized years ago.
But, it's dad. It's what's for dinner.
Hmm.
Yeah, so we get and you did call it way back when we had the shorts that this was obviously going to be part of the series for this season. that we're going to go back to the Kelpian homeworld.
Yeah, I mean, it was pretty much given. They spent way too much money on that short for them not to have it been part of something else.
Right. And then we just quick on the Prime Directive. We get the whole Prime Directive thing where Tyler says this is going to violate the Prime Directive. And Michael,
General Order 1.
Yes, and Michael... So-
I want to know when they changed the name. I want to know when they rebranded the Prime Directive.
Oh, it's always been General Order 1.
It's always just
You can call it either one.
It's interchangeable.
It's the same thing.
Yeah, I don't know. But
you don't think it was a marketing thing? Nobody followed it when it was General Order 1, so they're like, we got to find something else.
I don't know.
They call it Prime Directive and Discovery also. They call it both.
Oh, did they?
I'm pretty sure they have called it both.
Yeah, I missed that.
Yeah, they go back and forth, but General Order 1 is basically Prime Directive, so you hear it bounce back and forth. I even think they mentioned in the original series General Order 1.
There's several different – wasn't General Order 6 the one where you could, like, blow up a planet?
Yeah, that was a different one, if it calls for it, yeah. But what was I going to say? Tyler says this is going to violate General Order 1, and Michael basically says the Kelpian are aware of warp technology and spaceflight through the Baloo, but it's basically a judgment call because they're investigating the signals, so maybe we can still contact them. And you know, of course, they said, yeah, what the hell? Who cares?
Nothing like a little justification there.
Yes. So when they go down, like I said, they meet Saru's sister, and she is happy to see him, but then she's a little pissed off as well. So, you know, you just took off. You never told us that you were okay.
You never call. You never write. You missed all my birthdays.
That's exactly what he got. And
did you know I lost my virginity?
I'm married now. I have 6 kids.
I have 6 couplets.
Couplets. And we find out while they're having tea that the pylon in their village comes to life. And they realize that they are in trouble. Somehow the Baloo have figured out.
Well, they figured out as soon as they landed because we saw it, like, it hummed
to
life.
Kind of like,
but it had like an hour or so delayed response before they did anything.
Yeah, maybe they're just checking out what they were doing. So when they start seeing that and we see some, like, something happen on the horizon, like something might be coming, Michael and Saru beam out of there. So they get out and they leave his sister to figure out what's going on.
Leave her for dead. It'll be fine.
Yeah, that's pretty bad. Anyways, from there, they get the they beam up, and obviously Saru is pretty upset because he realizes this whole thing's BS and that this race is just eating them and destroying his people for no apparent reason other than something that they've been taught to believe their entire life, which is a lie. So. And
big nom noms.
Yes. Back in sick bay, Colbert is there with Stamets, and he's getting more tests. And apparently, he's pristine is the word they used. And his scar on his left shoulder is gone. So this was one of the things he left down there because it made him. He was hiking and he got hurt really bad. And a doctor came and. Helped him and sewed up his shoulder with fishing line, and it kind of left it as a reminder that of what made him
and why he decided to go into being a doctor. And it's just interesting. He seems like almost like repulsed a little bit by Stamets, or very annoyed by him at the very least.
Yeah, no, I really think it's a. Not as much that, but I think that like he's not in love anymore.
You
know what I mean? Like, I think he came back a different person, and I think I don't think the relationships are the same.
Well, think about this. Think about when people like go to war or something like that, and they come back home and like nothing's how they remember it because they've been transformed. So
true story. I got a buddy right here in Buffalo who. Doesn't remember the birth of his first 2 kids.
I don't either. I don't have any, though.
Well, that we know of.
Yeah, that we know of. You just left him.
No, I don't
left
have
him
any.
At the hospital.
No, out.
But yes. That, I mean, traumatic experiences change you, and sometimes
right. That's what I think it is.
Being built by mycelium, only to be torn back down by them as soon as they finish building you. I guess it's kind of scarring. It's like, why did you make me if you're just going to kill me?
And he was tortured living there for at least
9 months.
I was going to say six episodes. Yeah, so it had to be a good amount of time.
Well, they skipped the 9 months. So I don't know if the time Mycelium Network works the same as it does in other places.
Right, right.
We don't know.
So you're thinking he was there for maybe 8 or 10 episodes in mycelial time?
Maybe.
For like dog years?
Maybe. I mean, we don't know, because I mean, they said it was going to be an hour, and I feel like they're only in it for like 15 minutes, and like all of a sudden they're getting ready to get all swallowed up by the stuff that will turn you inside out. So, I don't know.
Right, right. Yeah, so, some time slippage there somehow. We don't really know, but he does seem changed.
That was the cocoony thing was last episode, right? It wasn't the one we're talking about. I felt that was like, David, at the beginning of this episode, you said you were, or maybe before we were even live, you said that you weren't crazy about the last two episodes.
Yeah, he doesn't like them. I like them. He did not.
Yeah, I kind of felt it was more Star Trek-y.
The last two episodes just felt way over melodramatic for me, which the last episode had lots of like plot issues, and you didn't like last episode very much, Aaron. You were like lots of plot holes and story issues.
I thought the Mycelium Network thing had some big issues that they could have spelled out better, or they could have, you know, plotted out better. But there were things I did like about it. But I liked the one where Saru was going to die and his gangula dropped off. That was good for me, but you didn't like that as much.
No, the whole scene was way too melodramatic. And the whole thing – the thing is, the first part of both those episodes are great until they got to the – because they started feeling really Star Trek-y. And I agree with you, Pete. They did feel super Star Trek-y, which is great. But at the same time, they got into the like TOS levels of melodrama or worse. Which I wasn't a huge fan of, like too much melodrama for me. And then you knew Saru wasn't going to die, which took away, which made them dragging out that he might die less impactful for me.
Well, I don't know. Maybe I'm naive guy. I didn't know he wasn't going to die. You know, like all of these new series, they, and I'm not just talking Star Trek. You know, they kill off characters as a surprise all the time.
But the thing is, and like, they're in Discovery.
It could be that Doug Jones is just like, I can't wear these hooves anymore.
but the thing is, I mean, like, you know, they killed Culper. That was the only shocking thing that happened last season.
My mouth dropped open when they killed Culper. I was like, what?
It was the only thing that was truly unexpected last season when they killed Culper, and then they just undid it. So like all that impact is totally gone now.
You weren't surprised at all that Tyler was Vok?
No. I called that from the second we saw Vok. I was saying Tyler.
Like, we were kind of on that one.
Nothing surprised me last season except for his death. The Culper's death, like, you know, I didn't want Mir Lorca also wasn't a surprise. I didn't want it to happen. But like three episodes before it was revealed, they started dropping major hints. I'm like, no, please, please don't, please don't. And then they did.
Yeah, no, I got that one in advance.
I just read into stuff a lot, and I try to like figure out where stuff's going, and that's probably to my detriment. But it's also partly my job since we podcast it on every week, and I don't want to go into it oblivious or not, without any.
Well, you and I've had conversations about this. Like I've gotten to the point where I can sit and watch an hour worth of television and not pay attention to the stuff that happened before it or after it, and I find that now I'm enjoying things much more than when I would get wrapped up in the, you know,
the minutia.
The plot holes and the this and the that, particularly things that tie into series that were produced, you know, 40, 50, 30, 20 years ago. Yeah. Like, I just don't even care about that anymore because it's just, you know, for me, it's give me the 30 minutes or the hour of television and I can enjoy it more if I don't connect to that. But I'm in awe of you guys that can connect all those dots. I just can't connect them anymore.
Well, let's put a pin in that. We'll circle back to that because I think there's some things to be said. We can maybe dig into that a little more after we get through this recap. What I like to, so Burnham and Saru, like I said, beam back, and they're at yellow alert, and they are now being surrounded by the blue Baru.
The Ba'ul.
Ba'ul.
Yeah, dude, you are totally wrapped up in the Jungle Book here.
Am I?
Yeah, Baloo is Jungle Book.
Bare necessities.
Bare naked necessities.
Yeah, so they're getting surrounded by them, and they want their Kelpien brought back, which they're talking about Saru, of course.
We need that. We cannot miss one morsel of that delicious Kelpien.
And Pike tries to...
negotiate.
Yeah, it's like, hey, we got this mutual interest. There's this. We're looking for this red angel. We saw the red burst. Could you tell us something about that? That'd be great. And he actually, Pike asks Saru to stay out of this conversation. And
Saru butts in.
I cannot believe that. I mean, Saru speaks up. I can't believe that Pike didn't have him like thrown off the bridge.
He asked him to leave. He should have thrown him in the brig. I mean, it was like borderline insubordination, like Michael.
Borderline? It was insubordination.
Yeah, it was pretty totally much insubordination.
I would have him off the bridge the minute he kept on going. So he starts saying, you know,
I'm smarter than you. I know this stuff.
I know. And then they're like, you don't know
food no more.
And he's like, you don't know anything.
You don't even know what you are. And when they said that, I started thinking that maybe the Ba'ul don't eat the Kelpians. Maybe the Kelpians turn into Ba'ul.
Oh, that's an interesting thought.
I wondered that actually myself too, but I thought there has to be more to that story. And then I thought, are we going into Star Trek insurrection territory?
Yes. Yes, we are. pretty much.
But so Pike brings out that Saru has political asylum. He's a Starfleet officer protected by the Federation. And there's no way they're handing him over. And so they start surrounding them. And Pike kicks Saru off the bridge. So Saru walks off, kind of pissed off. And he goes down to one of the lower levels. He goes, kind of thinks to himself, what the hell am I sitting here for? And he goes to the transporter room and tells the transporter officer to get out. And he gets on the transporter pad with a time delay, and Burnham comes up with a phaser, tell him not to go on, and he just says, I'm going down there. You can shoot me if you
How
want.
How many but. Times has Michael got to point a phaser at Saru?
Well,
it's getting, at least once or twice normal. A season.
I guess I don't understand why you set the thing for 60 seconds.
Yeah, I know. He could have gone 20.
He's a really slow walker, apparently. Boom.
He's not. We see him gallop through the jungle at one point in time, right?
I know. They talked about how fast he was last season, but I'm just like, yeah, I'm just...
Yeah, in that Tree of Life episode, whatever that was.
The circle and hippiness.
Hippiness. That's right. So up on the bridge, they detect that somebody beamed down. And, of course, they figure out it was Saru pretty quickly. And so Saru is obviously breaking all the rules now that he doesn't have his threat gangula. And he just does whatever he wants.
He's an unruly teenager. Like I said, second puberty.
Second puberty. You were kind of right on that. Yeah. So Burnham then goes to Tilly, who's working on this sphere information they got. And they said, do we have anything on the Kelpien world, any information? And can we figure anything out? And so they're going to sit there and crunch the numbers of what the sphere might have picked up at that time. So what's the Kelpien race turn into, and what happened to them that they were subjugated and turned into food?
Pikachu.
So,
who would eat those little things? Like, do either of you guys ever eat squid? Like, I wouldn't eat squid. Why would I eat that little ganglion danglion thing?
You know, I've eaten octopus. I've had calamari.
You know, calamari is a different thing. They chop it up and deep fry it.
I've had that. I've had deep fried, and I've had it not deep fried too. I've had it with pasta, which it's actually, if it's prepared right, it doesn't taste bad.
I imagine you could say the same of Kelpien.
Well, remember, these are drippy, gross creatures, so they probably don't mind what it tastes like.
You could be right.
I mean, the thing is, like, what we discover in this episode, they don't even eat them out of necessity because, like, it's their favorite food. They eat them out of fear.
Well, yeah, exactly. So Saru goes down to the planet, but obviously gets brought up on the Baru. What's it? Balu?
Ba'ul.
Baru?
Ba'ul.
Balu ba- ship.
Ba'ul.
And he is in probably the goofiest, as we were saying before we started recording, the goofiest set I've seen on Discovery yet.
It's the transporter pad redress. So he beamed from transporter pad to transporter pad, basically. I wish they would have done something more to it to disguise it as the transporter pad, because with those, like, those pylons of light, although those are probably the load-bearing structures of the set, so they probably couldn't move those, but it's just very clearly the transporter pad.
Right. And he does have his sister, Serana, is there with him, and they are have a quick exchange, basically saying that,
"What did you do?
What, you bastard? Now I'm lunch." But he said that his face is beautiful to her, but he hoped that she'd never see it again, because it meant that Saru was actually free. And but of course now they're both, looks like they're going to be food. And from the there's a pool in that room that they're in, and a gross oily figure starts coming up out of it. And then we jump back to Burnham and Tilly, who are working on the information from the sphere that they collected. And apparently there was the Ba'u are at the verge of extinction at some point, and it was because of the Kelpians. And at some point the Kelpians were the predators, and somehow they were killed off and subjugated by them. So there's something about the Kelpian race that become, like, ultra-aggressive.
They become the Hulk. Rage monsters.
Yes, they do. They do. Yeah. And then...
Yeah. All I'm saying is try to turn the Hulk into sushi and see how that goes for you.
Green sushi. Mm. So,
it's just one big pile of wasabi.
Oh. My mouth, it burns. Then we go back to Saru being in his restraints.
Clamped
to the wall. And it looks like they are going to meet the Baloo at the first for the first time. And he kind of breaks it all down for them, what the great balance was, that the Kelpians were, you know, they start off afraid of everything and frail, but then they become super aggressive, and they hunted down the Ba'u to almost extinction until they fought back and got rid of them and subjugated them. And and we do see what Saru's new teeth actually do. They actually fire these little spikes out from where his ganglia was.
He's a porcupine.
But there's a force field that protects the Ba'u. So.
Probably like a Kelpie pine.
Kelpie pine.
The yeah. Kelpie has turned evolved into Kelpie pine. Da, da, da.
And which then, does sound a little bit like a Pokemon.
Yes.
It does. And so when the Ba'u oily creature goes back into his pit, they send these probes in. They're going to basically chop Saru's face up.
They want to food process his face.
I mean, it's got to be the worst death possible.
Just like scramble your face till you're dead.
I mean, the only worst thing is going straight into your balls. So, well,
the thing is, at least, like, you know, they do that.
I think
they
anything that does that is awful.
They don't want to potentially spoil the ganglia, so they just take out the face, because the face probably doesn't taste very good.
Yeah, I'm sure. And get rid of dental records.
You don't eat the head of a fish either.
True. True.
Chop that thing off, throw it away.
Throw it out.
Got to keep the ganglia, though.
But then Saru goes into Hulk mode and rips out his restraints. Actually, there was a quick scene. You'd have to see it again just before that happens. And it looks like one of his restraints came loose. I could see it kind of just hanging there for a minute. So, but then the next scene, it's back there. So.
In the same scene, did you hear him say, "Saru smash"?
Yes,
ooh, and then
he farted as he pulled those things off the wall. So he pulled so hard he farted.
And his sister passed out from the smell.
I definitely didn't hear that.
And it melted the paint off the wall.
Then you can see the real transporter set.
Yeah, wait till you're 50. You guys will know.
I'm right behind you, buddy. Not far. Yeah, so he hulks out and he breaks his bonds, destroys all the probes with his bare hands, and then saves his sister Serana from the drones ripping her apart as well. And from there, we get back into Discovery, and they're trying to hail the Balru again. And they get the
by the end of this episode, you're absolutely gonna be able to pronounce that.
I don't know. I still think I'm wrong. And then
you are
good.
Tell him, Dave.
Ba'ul.
Ba'ul.
Like Gua'ul, but Ba'ul.
Even when he says it, you can't repeat it. What the hell, Dave?
Well, this is what you get when you get a third-rate recap. So. You get this, Saru, gets it, calls into and says that they're in the structure down on the planet. And this is where we see that, the Balu is going to blow up, the rest of the towns because they can't, control, the Saru or Discovery. So they're going to just genocide everybody.
Well, they also rig up a device to accelerate everyone into their Akai.
Say again?
They program the the Gua'uld, I'm saying the wrong one, the Ba'ul device to get everyone to change. And then that's when the Ba'ul decide to nuke the entire planet.
Right. Right, but like I said, they're ready to just to get rid of the whole thing, which is pretty ridiculous. So, yeah, so
picking up their ball and going home.
I guess, but so much for the great balance. You know,
well, they're almost sort of generous because in a Enterprise, they had the genocide episode where they had the sick people in the other race that was going to take dominance. At least like they figured out a way like make them both live. Like they didn't commit genocide way back when. They just kind of like, yeah, you can live. We'll just keep you under our foot.
Yeah, true. That's a good point. Which we did talk about. What was that for the Prime Directive episode? I can't remember.
Yeah, that was the
General Order one.
General Order One.
I think we did that on our own without the Prime Directive episode. I can't remember the Enterprise episode name, but we talked about it a while back.
It was a while
back. It's either before or after the Prime Directive series, I think.
So Saru is doing some hacking on their base or ship or whatever you want to call that thing that's coming out of the ocean or lake that they're in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's stolen from Infinity War.
Is that what it was?
Yeah, it's that. What the hell's the name of that prison that's underwater?
I don't know. I thought it was the Legion of Doom.
The barge, the raft.
Is that? Oh yeah, I forgot about that. Jeez, I forgot about that place. Yeah. Yeah. So then they're going to do the genocide thing, and this is where they enact their plan and to get rid of the Kelpian Gangula, and
the Red Angel shows up just in time to save the day.
And strangely enough, Saru with his amazing
special eyes
can see more about the Red Angel. We see that the Red Angel looks more like he's got technology all over him, like it's something else.
Looks like a high-tech spacesuit.
Yeah, something else is happening there. So it's somebody's jumping around doing that.
You think it's Spock?
I hope not. I hope not. I see that floating on Facebook that it's Spock. I hope not.
It's a probability, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, they're pretty tied together somehow.
Right. So from there,
maybe it's Gabriel Lorca.
I hope so. That'd be great.
We've totally needed a way to get him back into the mix.
We totally do.
That would be interesting. That'd be weird.
Time to cancel my CBS All Access kind of way.
You'd be like, get me out of here.
Yeah, okay, I'm done.
Well, he fell into the Spore Network thingy, so maybe it transported him into the future. And then
where he was like, I need to build a winged suit.
Exactly. It made him a little bit crazy.
Makes all the sense in the world to me. So Pike then orders that the photon torpedoes to take out all the pylons that are basically enacting this genocide to take them all out, to blow them up. And then they're going to use electromagnetic magnetic pulse to disable these their stronghold base weapons and shields, and they defeat them pretty easily. So I guess the Kelpians are saved, and now they're all survived.
They're all Kelpie pines.
Kelpie pines, yeah. It's in this strange conversation Serana has with Saru. Basically, Saru wants Serana to stay with him, maybe for a little bit, but she says you gotta come back and stay on the planet and help reintegrate the people with the Balu or whatever. And it's strange to me because how do we know that they're just not going to fall into old patterns like they did before? They say they won't, but how can you predict a whole planet worth of Kelpians that they're all going to be good?
I don't know. It's kind of unresolved, I think. And what's to keep the Ba'ul from fixing their technology and just wiping them out anyway?
Right. Right, exactly.
Just because their gun broke the first time doesn't mean they can't fix it and shoot it later.
I mean, Michael uses that as an excuse to make the whole thing happen. She's like, you know, it's going to take generations,
right?
You know, for the Kelpians to catch up because they're so far behind. So well,
that's what I'm saying. Like, they're so far behind. I mean, even with like just whatever other advanced technology they have, they could just go do it more like. Walk out and shoot them with a gun. Like, just kill them all. I mean, if they want to execute them all, there's other ways of doing it.
Yeah. Right. Well, then we jump into the mess hall. We have Tyler and Pike, and there's a quick exchange between them. Basically, Pike giving him a report to Tyler saying that, look, the Red Angel, Saru got a good look at it, and he looked like a humanoid with a mechanized suit. And some extremely advanced technology.
It's Iron Man.
It's Iron Man. That's right. It's Tony Stark. It's
Falcon. Robert Downey Jr. is a
the Falcon.
It's the Falcon. It's
the Falcon. Yeah.
It's future Sam Wilson.
There you go. And then they go back and forth on basically how Tyler. This is where I was saying before. Tyler seems to be toying the Section 31 line pretty darn hard. Tyler's aware there isn't a war anymore, but they're trying to prevent any war. And Pike's like, what are you talking about? Like, we're every mission we go to, everything we go to these Red Bursts, we're actually helping people. It's like a rescue mission kind of thing. And then he makes this jab at it and saying that, you know, last war took its toll on people, fought it. We're just trying to prevent that from happening again because Pike had to sit out the Klingon Federation War. So. And
I mean, he's speaking from this experience, and it's like, yeah, it was a harder toll on you because you were a Klingon who got operated on and who thought he was a human being tortured.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Because they did the mind graft apparently before they did the body graft, and that's what fucked him up.
Yeah,
there was that super cool Klingon sex scene.
Yes, there was, or sex, some kind of scene,
sort of bizarre.
Yeah,
having sex with a porcupine. She just had like points and stuff sticking out all over.
Yeah,
they're much more. The new Klingons are much more armored than the.
I miss Lursa and Mator with their smooth boob windows.
Right.
That's nice. Klingons I can get behind or in front of or on top on. I don't know.
Or behind.
Behind. Yes.
Anyway,
not so much Lorel. She's kind of scary.
Yeah, and we get the last scene with Serana and Saru as they she beams down on the planet and they say goodbye. And Burnham brings up this Greek quote, says that he who learns must suffer, and even in our sleep, pain cannot forget. Forget falls drops by drop from the heart. So basically, you know, knowledge makes you suffer sometimes. So and it kind of leaves it with that.
And that's what they say: is ignorance is bliss.
There you go. Pete, you're a guest. How did you enjoy this this episode, The Sounds of Thunder?
Well, I did. It wasn't the best episode of the season, certainly. But like I said a while back, you know, season two is much more Star Trek-y to me. And I enjoyed a couple parts of it. I enjoyed the sort of... The Discovery was kind of a secondary part to the story, you know? Like the story was the Bahul and the Kelpians, and then the Enterprise – or I'm sorry, the Discovery just showed up there mostly to insert Saru into the story. And that's Star Trek-y to me. You know, like the away team gets to go be part of the story.
Right.
You know what I mean? And so I'm enjoying that. This week was Saru's week. Last week was Tilly's week. You know? So it's
they get a little like episode where it's their
show. Yeah, their thing. And you know, and I'm hoping that we get to see more of the there's some bridge crew that we've gotten to know a little bit more about this season. And then there's some other bridge crew that they're just there.
Yeah.
We need a Detmer episode.
So yeah. the Chekhov and the Sulu of this crew, I wish I knew their names better. But
Detmer's the one with the eyepiece, and I can't remember the other one's name. It's like Ottawa or something like that.
Yeah. And then there's Arium.
Yeah, the robot.
Android. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, and we're getting – like those three women characters, we're getting to know them.
Slightly.
The communications person in the back, he doesn't say much about anything.
Right.
And, you know, so maybe season three is his thing. But so, you know, was it the best episode of the season? No, I don't think it was. But definitely enjoying season two as a whole better than I enjoyed season one.
Yeah.
And I enjoyed season one. I mean, I was one of the people who said, you know, I like this. I do. Mm-hmm. I'm not troubled by the differences in technology from TOS to this. I'm not troubled by them at all. I don't think you could have given audiences in 2018 and 2019 what it needed to be to much more closely tie into the Enterprise and then the Gap and TOS. I don't think you could give modern audiences what would make it more connective to the original series and have them like it. I think it would be gone by now if they tried to do that. I think the production design needed to be much more modern. I think that, you know, some of the stuff that that they've done needed to be, you know, those I love the hologram communications. I love them.
Let me just do a little pushback. Not that I totally disagree with what you're saying, but just play a little devil's advocate here.
I don't care if you disagree with me or not.
No.
This is already recorded, so what are you going to do, throw it out?
Well, maybe.
Don't
make me push delete.
Oh, I didn't hit record. Happened. Fuck, guys. I'm sorry.
It's happened before. So what I was going to say is just that the idea we were talking before before we got into the episode is that how CBS All Access is a little bit of a hurdle for a lot of people to get into Star Trek who are new fans who, you know, maybe only know the JJ universe and JJ movies. So they're not going to CBS All Access. Now, we're only talking about the same pool of people who are super fans of Star Trek from either the original series and, you know, going forward all the way to Voyager and maybe Enterprise. You know, so those are the people who are getting in, you know, getting CBS All Access. So when they do not pay any type of homage to, you know, us older fans, and I'm not saying they should keep everything from TOS. Don't get me wrong. I think that would be a huge mistake on production level. But when they kind of just like gloss over, like, yeah, whatever, that's old shit. You know, I think a lot of people get pissed off. And yeah,
what would you want?
No, for your homage,
what would you want for that? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, and it's a serious question. It's not designed to be like, geez, Aaron, you're dumb.
You know what I mean?
Like, it's a serious question. Yeah. What do we want for homage in 2000 in 19 that could tie back to 1969, you know?
Well, obviously, like I said, the old look of that stuff is never going to look, even if you go back to the 80s of you know Wrath of Khan Search for Spock stuff, you know, is just going to look dated. Let's face it, even the Next Generation stuff was going to look dated,
right?
So, I mean, there's no way you're going to do that. You're not going to recapture that again. But what gets me, and I think it gets Dave too at certain points, is that, you know, you have guys like us and people that are even more walking encyclopedias of Star Trek with no freaking everything.
Right.
You know, they have the whole book written down in, you know, scripture of what happened in Star Trek, and they can call up those verses at any moment you want. And yet here you have them writing these episodes, and they just they make a lot of stupid, easily changed in writing things with if it comes to what's going on with the Klingons, like Dave, how we talked about how there was the Klingons always said that there was never a female chancellor, you know, because they didn't allow females to be in the High Council.
Yeah.
Stuff like that. I mean, I'm not saying that's the thing, but I'm just saying there was little things like that just kind of like just irk you. You go like, well, you know, we had all those great episodes with Worf and even Deep Space Nine, you know, where we got all these great you know, look into Klingon culture, and that all kind of gets tossed out. And it's not saying that we want to redo the look, but let's keep with the storyline a little bit. And it was just frustrating.
I guess I would say, and this, your choice there might have been a bad example, and I'll tell you why. Because look at the world now, right? Look at what's happened in the past 2 to 3 years, and maybe as part of trying to get new fans, they have to include some things that wouldn't fly with canon. So with the Me Too movement, with you know, women running for president, with all of the things that are going on now and the need to maybe capture some young female fans, they make a decision. And I totally understand it from a point of view, you know, as a guy who's running a website that does hundreds of thousands of page reads a year, we make decisions, you know, and maybe they're not all good ones, but we make decisions with the idea of putting eyes on our content.
Yeah, but like I'm saying, the pushback I'm giving is like, I'm not saying that Star Trek Discovery doesn't have its validity of going its own course and figuring out its own story, you know, and let the writers do what they have to do and let the production units do everything, is make it as beautiful and cool looking as possible. I think they should. It's just that you're literally building CBS All Access on the backs of Star Trek fans.
You are.
And
that's absolutely. And Christine Baranski fans apparently as well.
You know, maybe to an extent. But my point only being is that I find it very it's a little bit like I understand there's a lot of dissent in the Star Trek fandom because of it. I don't agree with the dissent with it, because if you watch Star Trek Discovery, you'll realize it's a pretty damn good show. It's just that there's little things like that I think could grease the wheels a little bit of that, you know, like $7 a month, you know, in service fee to have CBS All Access. That's all my point. I think it's a big thing, and I think it would have gone a long way. It'd be like someone, you know, doing a Star Wars movie, but then like rewriting some of the backstories of a lot of the characters or things that happened. People would lose their shit. So
yeah, well, even when they don't,
Disney's already done that with all the movies they've made.
Oh, I know, but
and I mean, quite frankly, same problem, right? Because Star Wars came out in 1977, right? And then they decide to do the prequel series, which were mostly not very well received. And so when we circle back 40 years later, they got to do some things to make stuff work. And it's, you know, it's not stuff that the purists are happy about.
Right.
Now, you made a good point that I've never given any thought to until you said it tonight, about CBS All Access is really not developing the Star Trek universe because it's a paywall thing. right? So, and clearly this is the model that they want. So when the Giorgio Section 31 spinoff series comes out, it's going to be on CBS All Access.
Yeah.
Right. They're not going to pop that up on CBS Lite.
Right.
Right. Right. Same thing with the Starfleet Academy. You know, like it'll be interesting to see if that's what they do with the
Picard series.
With the Picard series.
All the series are going to be behind CBS All Access except for the one geared at kids, which is going to be on Nickelodeon.
So far, that's what we've heard.
The fact that they're selling more memberships than they ever expected is a thing, you know, like it's validating that model. So now they don't have to put stuff on broadcast TV because they validated the model that they can make money off of behind the paywall.
But how many more could you get?
They're not developing the audiences.
Yeah. How much more could you get? You know,
I don't know.
And if you obviously this is their beginning. They're putting their foot the first time in this water, and they're trying to get started. So, like I said before, we're building this on the backs of Star Trek fans. A lot of people are happy to see it, but a lot of people are kind of pissed off, and they feel kind of like, oh, you're just kind of ripping us off kind of thing.
I think the reason they're putting Star Trek behind a paywall is because they saw how much money we gave to Axanar, how much money we gave to Star Trek Continues, all the other Renegades, all these fan-funded things. So CBS saw that, put an end to it, and then it's like, well, give us money for Star Trek. We'll make Star Trek now.
Well, yeah. But they're going to have to build the base somehow. They're going to have to expand that base if they want to continue to do that. Because, I mean, I got to tell you.
Well, the Picard shows would try to get everyone back. Like, if everyone who says they don't want to watch Discovery, they're going to come back for Picard.
Sure.
Like, they will pay the money then, and then they can catch up on Discovery and then decide if they actually like it or not instead of hating on it for no reason.
But here's the thing. Like, you know, I'm an Arrowverse fan, right? That's my thing. So this season we have five shows, right? And then next season they're talking about bringing in Batwoman. I can't keep up with all that stuff, right? So if they do the same thing to Star Trek where they put 5, 6, 7 series back there behind the paywall, you're going to end up losing some people. Like you're losing some people now in all the Arrowverse stuff.
Well, hopefully they'll be in different time periods, so they're not like as clusterfucky as the Arrowverse, where all the Arrow stuff is always overlapping here and there and back and forth with all the different shows. Well, so we have to watch them in order. Like the Section 31 show will probably intersect with Discovery. Having two shows go back and forth with each other, that's fine. And if the Starfleet Academy is a different time period, the Picard show is definitely a different time period.
Right.
So, I mean, we've got different time periods with these shows. So
yeah, but that – I mean, but David, that's never mattered for Star Trek. I mean, Kirk was in a movie with Picard, you know?
Well, sure. But I mean,
Scotty was in a movie with whatever. Spock was in every movie right up until Leonard Nimoy died, you know? Like it was – so like the time hopping thing, different time periods, that doesn't matter at all. And the Arrowverse thing is basically their answer to the MCU. That's why all of that stuff is connected, and it's working really well for the most part. There's like one of the five shows is not connected, and I imagine that that's going to change. I imagine the crossover next year pulls Black Lightning in. But, you know, all I'm saying, I think, is that you could overload a smaller audience because it's paywall stuff.
Well, and
they need to build.
But at the same time, it's all easier to watch because it's all streaming. It's all there. It's not like you have to DVR it, remember it, because all this other stuff's on regular television and whatnot. I mean, I think it's going to be easier to follow. Because, I mean, back when I had a TV and cable and stuff, I was DVRing like Flash and Arrow. And now it's a whole bunch of shows. And I never watched Supergirl or any other ones.
But well, I think to build that audience, don't you think you take one of the shows and you put it on regular TV?
You know, you think they would do that just to get people whet their appetite a little bit. They did it with the first two episodes of Discovery.
No, just the first one.
Oh, it was just the first one. I thought they did the second one too. Nope. But this is where it's all going. I mean, Disney is pulling The Punisher and all the other stuff, the Daredevil shows off Netflix, and they're going to do their Disney Channel, which will have all of Marvel content, and they will have all of the regular Disney and Star Wars content, and people will pay like an HBO subscription for that.
Everything's going that way.
It's all going that way. And this is what people said a long time ago. Why can't we just pay for, I only watch out of my cable network package. I only watch like 5 or 6 channels.
Well, they don't understand. They don't understand marketing, right? Because you're going to get a lot less content for
a lot more money.
For a lot. Well, maybe even the same amount of money, because cable ain't cheap, man.
That's true.
Right, like my cable bill a month with my internet, because we have a little bit enhanced internet, it's almost $200 a month. It's crazy expensive.
Yeah, you got to play the cable game. You got to keep switching to keep your price down.
Keep switching what?
Yeah,
like I can't get rid of my.
Well, you got to get the internet, but I mean, like you got to switch to Dish. You got to switch back and forth to Dish and cable.
I'm not doing
that. Keep the bill down. It's just
But anyways, I mean, what a game you play. I mean, this is where it's going. I mean, I think cable will see a lot of those channels. They'll still be around, but I don't think they're going to be as big as they used to. And I think we've already seen a lot of these other channels and programming kind of going away, unless it's a big channel and people really do tune in, like a Discovery Channel or a Sci-Fi Channel or those kind of things.
Well, it's also because a lot of people are cutting the cord, and so less people paying for cable means less money is going to these companies who provide stuff for cable. So they have to make up the revenue stream in other ways. So they're going to try to cater their content and make an app for it, which is why everyone's doing that. Because, I mean, so many people are cutting the cord lately, and Netflix and everything. So everyone's jumping on that pay for us if you want our stuff bandwagon.
At some point in time, you end up having to make choices because they just can't afford it anymore.
But that's what I do, honestly. I
stopped watching Westworld, which I loved season one, and I just didn't go back because I wasn't paying $15 a month for HBO.
Right. And you can just wait till it comes out on DVD and rent it at a
Family Video.
Family Video, thank you.
Twizzlers there too.
Yes, it's good. Fresh Twizzlers. But I think that's where it's all going, and I'm hoping CBS All Access, if they get increase their membership, that the prices will go down slightly.
That's not happening, Aaron.
I'm hoping.
They're only going up from here.
I appreciate your hope, but that's not happening.
I mean, if you think about it, it's not as expensive as a Netflix, but it's close.
Right. It's not as expensive as Netflix, and it's not as expensive as HBO. So they have no reason to go down.
I know, but they better pump out some more shows here soon that people are going to want to see. I mean,
how much stuff can Christine Baranski do?
That's right. It's a good point. She's a tired woman. Let's get back to the episode. Dave, what did you think about this?
Way better than the last two episodes for me personally. A lot less melodrama, so I felt less annoyed by the episodes. Still not as good as the first three, I think. The first two are super solid for me. But this is definitely, I'm out of the dip, and we're back on the incline. So that's kind of exciting. For me, the worst part of the episode was just that the Ba'ul place was just a clear redress of the transporter room set.
The set looked a little cheesy to me, honestly.
It was very, like Aaron was saying before the show, he's like, it felt very TNG, just like a really simple set, and it's just because they stripped down the transporter room to its bare essentials and just put up like that repeating pattern on the walls. I don't know,
remember, you're on a TV budget, not a movie budget. You get movie budgets, you can do these things for $150 million, $200 million. You can't do that with episodic TV.
Well, they had been, and we are seeing the after effects of Gretchen Berg and Aaron Harbert spending a lot of money on the front half of the season.
Right.
So, they are having to take shortcuts in some areas. And overall, the episode looked really good.
I thought so.
Just that one set was just kind of awkward. I feel like they didn't do enough to disguise it as a transporter room scene, because in season one, the Orion embassy was Emperor Georgios' throne room. And it was redressed beautifully. I didn't know until I read online and that it was. And then I rewatched the scenes in there and I was like, oh, it is. But they just did such a good job of redressing it. I didn't notice it on first thing. And that's a good redressing.
I don't even notice this stuff, man. I don't even notice it.
Yeah, I mean, it's
a good. I've got a degree in scenic design. That's what my college degree is. I don't even notice it. I just watch it.
Yeah. Oh, man. I look at all the different things. Yeah, so like the redress a little bit bothered me, like and because it just seemed too minimalist and it didn't have to change it. But yeah, that's my biggest complaint about the episode. And if that's my biggest complaint about this episode, that's not really a whole lot, I think. So, and it's about probably my favorite standalone through episode we've gotten out of either of the two seasons.
Mm-hmm.
It's fun. Red Angel theories online are crazy. People are saying Wesley. Some people are saying Spock. Some people are saying it's the Discovery Computer's AI from 1,000 years in the future.
I read that. Yeah, from the Calypso episode.
Yeah, I'm just like, maybe she got so lonely she's trying to find her guy in the past. I don't know.
Are we the first ones that came up with the Lorca theory, though?
I think so. That's you, Pete.
Yeah, we're the first. Yeah. I have not seen a Lorca theory on it yet, so we're breaking that into holics. Maybe Screen Rant will take that and steal that too. because they took our theory about the baby, Ash's baby, being the albino in DS9, so who knows.
Which I totally buy into, by the way.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense.
I only buy into it from the Synthaholics, so I don't buy into it from Screen Rant.
Oh, that's great. Thank you. Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see where things go. Although the previews for next week, not super excited. It's kind of weird. Like, oh, we're going to go home to Vulcan, and then there's a weird squid monster that breaks a shuttlecraft. So it's kind of like I don't know what to expect at the next episode. But we do get Spock, finally. We finally get that carrot that we've been dangled in front of our faces for the first half of the season. So that's something to look forward to next week, seeing what Spock's up to.
You can't – if you're not spore driving, you can't get from where you are now, Kelpian Prime, to Vulcan in a short period of time. So you have to go through the land of mechanical squids to get there.
Oh, maybe.
The land of mechanical squids.
I thought it was kind of interesting that the –
the mechanical squid zone.
Like
there needs to be a place like that in Star Trek world.
Mechanical squid zone.
Yeah.
It's a playpen for the mechanical squids, and they tear apart shuttlecraft.
Because they're mechanical, the Prime Directive doesn't apply, so they Captain, have to go to the Beta Directive.
Where Captain Nemo of the Nautilus hangs out.
Exactly. Yeah. I thought the Red Angel was interesting with the technology on it and the way it blinked out. I wonder if there's spore technology built into that, because it looks like they sort of started to spin before it blinked out of existence. So I'm like, huh.
Maybe it's Leland.
Maybe it's Leland. Who knows?
It could be Ezra Miller.
Oh, there you go.
Because he looks a lot like that little flashback to Flash in Batman versus Superman.
A little bit, yeah.
When he jumps through the hole there, you know, so. Mm-hmm. And everybody huge. With that messy hair looks like current Spock or Ezra Miller. So
huge crossover there.
Right. It's interesting. Like
I'm a believer that everything is really just one big ass shared universe.
Oh,
so
could be. I don't have any theories yet for the Red Angel. It's too soon to say. For me personally, I don't like any of the ones that are out there. So I'm waiting myself to formulate a theory on the Red Angel. How about you, Aaron? Mm-hmm. What do you think about this episode?
I did enjoy it. I thought it. I guess I've been steadily enjoying everything from season two. There's nothing I really disliked about this episode. I didn't like, obviously, the part where Saru is mouthing off during the time with Pike. That seemed unrealistic as bridge protocol. I mean, he slapped Ash Tyler down before, you know. So obviously. Ash Tyler was trying to talk to Leland, two or three episodes ago where they were, it was last episode.
It was last episode, yeah.
Yeah, and he said, you know, you won't address anybody unless I give you permission. But then Saru just doesn't shut the hell up. And then there was also a scene where Saru doesn't want to give up the command chair for a moment.
I thought that was funny.
Yeah.
I didn't feel like he didn't want to give it up.
No, he just
forgot. You know, like he was just sitting there in his chair because he was there, and then, you know what I mean? Like Pike I didn't feel back, like yeah. it was, yeah, I didn't feel like it was malicious.
No, I didn't think of it that way. Yeah, but it was like, it seems to be a little bit more of him not being afraid of things. So maybe when you're not afraid of things, you're a little bit
lackadaisical.
Not lackadaisical, but you don't, like, you're not aware of others as much. You're just, like, kind of focused on your thing because, you know, you're not worried about that guy standing next to you anymore. You're just right. Right.
One of my favorite things, if I can,
yeah,
the USSR Comedies. Yeah. There has never been a science fiction series in the history of this planet, and I am on record right now as the Synthaholics is saying this. Never been a science fiction series in the history of the planet that names ships better than Star Trek.
They do have some cool.
They pick great names.
Archimedes is pretty great.
I mean, they had the Hiawatha.
And yeah, Hiawatha was good.
I mean, some cool stuff, period. Yeah, they do have some cool names.
I have the list of all the starships.
Yeah, there's the Crazy Horse is one of them from Next Gen.
Just love the list.
Yeah. It's good stuff. Where else was it? But also, like, I still kind of feel like they glossed over. They tried to make a little thing with the Prime Directive why Saru was granted some kind of asylum. Still doesn't make a lot of sense to me, but, you know, whatever.
Yeah, I get you on that. I mean, I'm kind of, like, just turning my brain off to Prime Directive stuff at this point. It's just they're just going to break it every episode because they have to, because they're investigating the red things, so it doesn't. It's at this point they should just be like, "Hey, fuck the Prime Directive until we figure out what these red things are," and then just
do whatever.
Yeah, we'll just do whatever. Like, we'll commit genocide, whatever we have to do to find out what the red things are. No holds barred. We're breaking the Prime Directive every episode anyway. So,
General Order 1.
Yeah, just stop bringing it up. We're sending the Prime Directive until the red things are figured out.
Yeah,
because at this point
did it.
Yeah,
he suspended the writ of habeas corpus, right? So you can get rid of the Prime Directive if you need to.
Yeah, might as well.
Yeah, I guess you could do those things. You could, you know, yeah, suspend it or rescind it for a while.
I mean, they should just do that because, I mean, instead of them, like, struggling with it for a couple minutes every episode, just, like, and then ultimately breaking it, it's just, like,
it's not just every episode. It's every series.
Well, yeah.
I mean, sure. It would be cool. Every series in the history of Star Trek.
Sure.
It would be cool if they had, like, a Nuremberg trial at the end of the episodes, at this end of the season.
But I mean, tried them all.
But, I mean, they've broken the Prime Directive.
And they put them on the raft.
But, yeah, that's right.
I feel like they've broken the Prime Directive from episode 2 to episode 6. So only one episode this season where they haven't directly broken the Prime Directive. You know what I mean? So, I mean, it's like, it happens in every Star Trek series, but it usually doesn't happen consecutively in 6 episodes.
Yeah, but they normally have, you know, 23 episodes to get through, and these guys have to do it in 14. So they have to really jam those breaks.
Pack them in.
Get them in there.
The other thing is I connected a lot with Saru's kind of revelation of, you know, his whole life growing up as being a lie. I grew up living in a household that believed things that I grew up to end up not believing. So it was very much so like, oh, I spent a good part of my life believing kind of bullshit. And I give it a lot of credit that they go into something like that. Cause I don't think I often think about it to myself, how often do people actually take what was presented to them as a youth as this is what truth is, this is what the world is about. And then you look at it and go like, oh, you know what? That was all a bunch of garbage that somebody was, you know, floating downstream. And I still picked up on it. So, I thought that was good. I often encourage people, and usually nobody ever does, is, you know, try to look at things opposite to what you've been explained to, the answers that you've been given. You know, try to think of it in a different way of looking at it, and seriously look at it. It's hard to do sometimes because we are often entrenched in what we are brought up to believe in. So
there's definitely confirmation bias.
How do you mean?
I just mean,
oh yeah, yeah.
You know, we look for confirmation of what we believe more than we look for somebody to tell us otherwise, even ourselves.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it doesn't have to do with how you, well, I guess it's how you're raised. I mean, most people who grow up, if they, you know, are part of a religion or they're part of a political party, you know, you mm-hmm. probably will be part of that religion or political party, you know, and you will vote the same way as your parents voted, and you'll go to the same churches that your parents went to. And,
right.
You know, I'm not saying that everything is bullshit, of course, but there's a lot of stuff to seriously take in and think about. I basically have made myself, I try at least hard not to totally believe in one set of belief system or ideology, because I think it's a huge, huge way to get yourself trapped in a logic trap of, because you only see one side of an argument.
You know, well, and that's, you know, that's a big, lofty emotional thing, which is one of the things that mm-hmm. I kind of like about Star Trek. You know, it's headier than Star Wars. Star Wars is an action film.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so when you deal with things like your main character finds out everything he's ever been told in his life is a lie, that's heady emotional stuff, you know? So,
yeah. Yeah, no, I appreciate that a lot with Star Trek.
Me too.
And I appreciate that you, Aaron, are where you are now. I'm glad for our friendship. And
thank you.
I, you know, that you've walked that path to me is it explains some of you to me, you know, like, as you know what I mean, like I knew you for a while before I knew that. And
right.
You know what I'm saying? So, and it, I don't mean it in a bad way, but it's heady stuff. It's lofty. It's lofty in real life because you've lived it, and Dave and I kind of periphery, and Dave, you know, Dave, you've been through your path with that kind of stuff as well,
mm-hmm.
you know? So like that's Star Trek to me.
Yeah.
I like the emotional, intellectual side of things rather than I made the Kessel run in under 12 parsecs or whatever.
Right. Yeehaw!
Right? Like, and I absolutely wonder whether George Lucas at the time was just making shit up.
Oh, of course.
Right? Yes, and then they had to go back and somebody, you know, like 40 years later, they're like, you know, parsec's distance, right? It's not a time. So now we got to figure out how to make it fit in under 12 parsecs or 13 parsecs or whatever.
It took them 30 years, but they figured it out.
You know what I mean? So, like, that's what I like about Star Trek, and we're back to that, where there's emotional connections to the characters,
there's deep meat behind their characters, and we get to understand them better. I mean, obviously. The more we get into it, I think the first season was obviously very Michael-centric, which was interesting for a while, and then it got a little bit dragged out. So it's nice to see the other characters getting their stories told, and we're going to get more of them. You know, Tilly is wonderful. I'm so glad that she's getting more of a spotlight. You know, Stamets got a little bit of a story told in season one, but we're getting a little more fleshed out on him.
Mm-hmm.
So... I'm hoping actually we get a nice chunk of story on Pike at some point.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to getting some Pike info. I want to know more about him.
Yeah, it would be cool if we got more Pike.
Just over the movies, it's nice to have that character now. Like, if you think about it, one of the things that I find really fascinating is when these writers can go pick this little tiny nugget out of some source material and turn it into a whole show.
Yeah.
Like the fact that somebody was like, you know what we're going to do? We're going to make, in my opinion, the best Star Trek movie out of this one little episode we did that was so over the top goofy with Ricardo Montalban. And we're going to turn that into something. We're going to bring Rick back. He's going to reprise the role. You know, like, I thought that was fantastic. And the fact that they, you know, Pike, did he ever say a word in the episode that he was in? I mean, he was in that wheelchair-y thing the whole time. Did he ever say a word?
Well, beforehand, you know, obviously we have the pilot, and then the Menagerie Part 1 and 2 is kind of a redress of that pilot as a clip show, showing Pike when he goes to Talos, was it 5 or 6?
Talos 4?
4? Okay. And he meets the Talosians.
This is Talos 6.
And they kind of, you know, give him a life where he can even though he's disfigured, he can live a life of fantasy
with a beautiful woman who's also disfigured in real life. It's great.
Yeah, but they will never know.
The perfect love story.
Yeah. It's where they can, you know, they can alter his mind and he can go wherever he wants and just by thinking of it.
Still a better love story than Twilight.
What's not?
But you know that, Dave, I mean, just to put it for a Pike, you know, if they did a Pike series, we could go into the whole, like, up to where he gets, you know, maimed and put in the chair, you know?
That would be great. And we could also go back to what was happening before Discovery.
I'm just saying, it'd be cool to see that. And then, you know, we know it ends in tragedy, but then we know that maybe he goes to a better place, you know?
For sure.
Well, and I think you've got an actor in Anson Mount that you want to keep around.
Oh, he's fantastic.
He really is very good at it. You know, and not for nothing, but I think Bruce Greenwood played him in the JJ film.
Yes.
And I thought he was fantastic too.
Yeah, he was good.
I did. I thought he was really good too. You know, so this is a character that I want to learn more about. I'm so disappointed in the fact that it looks like Star Trek 4 with that cast is not going to happen, because I thought that cast was just so good. You talk about paying homage. These guys were so good at recreating the characters that we all love. Mm-hmm. The two characters that I think maybe weren't real good connections to the original series were probably Chekhov and Scotty. I didn't think Simon Pegg Scotty was you know, paid too much tribute to James Doohan, but
he was doing a real Scottish accent instead of a fake one.
Well, I mean, Carl Urban's Bones was so connected to DeForest Kelly's, you know, and Chris Pine's Kirk was so connected to Shatner's, and Kinto's Spock was so connected to Nimoy's. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So, like, I'm so disappointed that number 4 is not going to happen. And quite frankly, if I was Paramount, I would just move on and I'd reboot TNG now.
Hmm.
I'd make movies out of TNG or Voyager or Enterprise or I would just step away from the original series, and there's so much other stuff there that you could reboot and film. TNG had a good run on film. I thought, mm-hmm. you know, I thought some of it was good. Mm-hmm. Not my favorite films, but I thought some of it was good. And there's so many cool characters in the TNG part of that universe. Why not? Why not recast that thing, reboot it, and do, you know, 3, 4, 5 films with that?
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, I've been asking for a TNG reboot since the first JJ movie.
Yeah. So
I'd love to see that personally. Anything else, Aaron?
No, that's pretty much it.
Awesome. Well, thanks for joining us, Pete. Where can everyone find you on the Yield Internets?
Oh, my gosh. So many places. I would start with thegeekiverse.com, where I am writer, editor, and Star Trek aficionado. Or you can find me at almost every social media at Pete Herr.
Very good. Very good. The music is provided by Warp 11, except our intro. Our intro is by our friend Dave Wilkes. The show you can find online at syntholics.com. You can email us at syntholics@yahoo.com. You can join the Facebook discussion at facebook.com/groups/syntholics. You can tweet at the show at syntholicduo. You can tweet at me personally at David_J_Duncan. Aaron's at Blackbird2004 and Holly's at Lunar Thistle.
And please go to Apple iTunes, rate and view us there. Give us 5 stars. Say something nice about us and let other people know.
I say nice stuff about you guys all the time.
I really appreciate it. You wrote a nice article about us.
Yeah, you did. It's great. Thank you.
And very nice. As well, if you can, please go to our Patreon page, patreon.com/synthaholics, and throw us a buck a month's not much to ask. You spend more of that on your hamburger, your heroin habit, your NPR subscription, all that stuff. So
your CBS All Access.
CBS All Access. Come on, guys. You can throw a buck. Come on. So you definitely be appreciated. As well, as we always say, a great way to support the show, if you can't do any of those two, is please tell your friends, tell your mother, tell your roommates, tell your girlfriend who doesn't watch Star Trek with you about Synthaholics. Let them know that we are out there. It's a great way to let people know about podcasts, about what we are. A lot of people don't even know what podcasts are. Strangely enough, we are so in the world of podcasts. Sometimes I talk to podcasts, other people, like, I don't know, even know what a podcast is.
Yeah, it's so weird when people are like, I don't even know what that is. Like, wow, it's hard to fathom, but it's true.
I just found out today that 54% of the world doesn't have internet. Oh. Those people don't know what podcasts are.
Yeah, but we're not talking to those people who don't know. I mean, not that we wouldn't.
It's not that we wouldn't. We just don't.
It's just that they're in parts of the world that don't have internet, which means they're in parts of the world that we're not in.
Well, when they start broadcasting us on like Radio Free Europe or something like that, then we'll be all right. So. Great.
Absolutely. Well, thank you again, Pete, for joining us. And thank you, Aaron.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, thanks.
It's a good time. Live long and prosper, one and all.
Before the night's over, I'll puke in the sink and we'll cry till we laugh and we'll both shit our pants. You're the best drinking friend I ever had.
Play, man. Push play. Push the damn button, Jamie.
Button's on. Button's on. Woohoo.
We are done.
We did it. That was only an hour and 45 minutes, right?
Yeah. That's usually where it goes. Hour and a half or so.
Well, the problem is that really I could have talked for another 2 hours now that there's no school tomorrow.
Yeah, if school was tomorrow, you'd be like, all right, guys.
I would have been done an hour ago.
So. Yeah.
Sorry, guys. Hour-long episode. That's all you get on a school night.
Just sleep in.
I have to go iron my khakis.
Ugh.